Hello and welcome to the Heat Check. My name is Wes Goldberg. With me, as always, it's David Ramil. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right. You know, I guess I could be doing better. You know, but the Heat season is over, and I can't help but feel a little disappointed.
Seems like it's just it's over a little too quick. If they would have just lasted, I don't know, five more games, it would have been a little bit better. I think I'm mostly disappointed that we just don't get to see Dwayne Wade and LeBron James in a playoff game.
Yeah, I could see that. Like if they had faced Cleveland, knowing full well the Cavaliers probably would have beaten them pretty easily, it still would have put a nice cap on the season, I think.
Sure, and making it just the fact that they would have made it to the Eastern Conference Finals,
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
would have been insane. I think there's still, you know, they could still hold their heads high, and there's still some value in being, you know, one of the final eight teams left, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's something, considering that
Absolutely.
They were in the lottery last year. And without Chris Bosh for, like, the whole second half of the season. But, yeah, definitely disappointing, and it's just funny because you knew that Wade and LeBron wanted to face each other. Wade mentioning that LeBron and him were texting before Game 7. Just stuff like that. It's just kind of weird that they wanted to face each other. LeBron had that quote earlier in that Raptors Heat series that he wanted to play Miami, and you know they just couldn't make it happen. But you know it was a hard fought series. It was really, you know, hard to watch for some people. But you and I made the case that it was kind of interesting for different reasons. But just
I
in
agree.
general, for the whole Heat playoff run, what were your thoughts? What were your takeaways?
From Miami's playoff run, I'd say, I think, you know, you can't help but find it successful considering that they lost Chris Bosh for as long as they did. And, you know, even to have faced Toronto without Hassan Whiteside, and I know you can't make that much of an excuse considering that they were without Jonas Valanciunas, but I think it's showed that Miami was capable of being flexible, mixing their lineup and still finding a way to be fairly effective. And I think, you know, I think a lot of the narrative surrounding how ugly the series was is kind of overblown. Like it's much more in style, I guess, to have a ball swinging offense and a more active, crisp offense perhaps. But, you know, that's not how it always works out, and I'm fine with it. It can't always be a very precise, beautiful game. Sometimes it's an ugly, grinded-out game, and it's fine. You know, it's there's still a winner, there's still a loser, and sometimes there's still beauty in particular moments there. So I think that's something that you can still appreciate. So overall, I'd say the series was a hard-fought one and a step forward for Miami. I think that sums it up.
Yeah, I think, you know, there was a lot of conversations around what the Heat were doing, going small. Maybe some second guessing. Well, you know, as it always happens in the NBA, especially with Eric Spoelstra, there tends to be a lot of second guessing.
He can't coach. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's a terrible coach.
Oh, well, my eyes and all the stats is telling me something differently, so I must be looking at something wrong.
Oh, okay. Well, I just wanted to let you know because I've heard some pro Spo rants coming from you. But I've been on the Twitters, and let me tell you, they've been telling me that Spoelstra is a terrible coach, so I'm just going to follow suit.
Fire Spo?
Hell yeah. I think Byron Scott has a relationship with Pat Riley from the Lakers days. I don't see why you can't bring him in.
That's a really good idea. He should just do that.
Yeah.
They already don't shoot well from three-point range. Might as well just go all in, double down.
That's right. And that progress from Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson, screw that.
My favorite argument on Twitter probably this entire season, the latter half of the season, was why didn't Spoelstra, somebody literally on Twitter told me once, if Spoelstra is such a good coach, why did it take him this long to start playing Josh Richardson?
Because they were in college. Because he was in college. I think that's pretty much it.
Well, yeah, he wasn't good enough. Like, I don't understand, like, people just think, like, oh, yeah, Josh Richardson, he was already a good three-point shooter. But, like, every story we read was that Spoelstra drove him to be a good three-point shooter.
He was not. I think that was actually one of the biggest knocks on him was that he wasn't much of a floor spacer. That he was just an athletic swing man who could handle the ball a little bit and was a very, very good defender. I think that was when we saw that.
Right.
But, you know, there were some guys there who kind of earned their place a little bit, and Ben Udra was playing great. Goran Dragic wasn't going anywhere. Tyler Johnson was really good defensively and really good from 3-point range before he got hurt. So all those things that
Chalmers
people
was in the
conveniently
mix for a
forget.
while.
Sure. Yeah. Sorry. I mean,
Yeah.
longtime Heat veteran and overall superstar Mario Chalmers
Greatest
was
of all
there taking
time.
minutes. That's right. I guess Spoelstra should have gotten that crystal ball removed from his ass, where it was clearly where he had it. Should have just looked into a little bit sooner. Wipe it down, take a good look, and seen that Josh Richardson is the future of the franchise.
Right, and he had nothing to do with him turning into a great 3-point shooter. That
No.
those late nights at the gym and forcing Richardson to shoot 400 3-pointers in a row, that was not Spoelstra
No, it's magic, Wes. You know, that's what goes into
at
those higher end analytics. It's just magic numbers. That's all.
Just needed a chance. So anyway, right. I thought the rook just Richardson and Winslow though in the playoffs. Them coming along, that's another positive, right? To go 2 7-game series as rookies is huge. Playing major minutes
Yes.
and major roles. Can we
Yes.
just talk about Winslow playing center for a little bit? I mean, that's insane. I think Jeff Van Gundy on the Game 7 broadcast said that he saw Winslow playing center in high school, and now he's playing center in a Game 7 of an NBA playoff series, and that's just. It's wild, and I thought about when Pat Riley had mentioned that Justice Winslow reminds him of Draymond Green a little bit after the Heat drafted Winslow, that got talked up quite a bit, but that's basically what Winslow is doing for the Heat in these last couple of games of the playoffs. He's just playing out of position, but he's defending at a high level. I mean, the dude is an elite defender already, rookie or not, just NBA wise, he's elite. I mean.
I guess you'd have to make that argument, right? I mean, he certainly's had, maybe he hasn't been perfect all year round, but nobody is. I mean, Kawhi was victimized by Kevin Durant in the semifinals there. So I mean, clearly, and we know that Leonard is a very good defender. So yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Justice Winslow is a very, very good defender, and more impressive. Again, I keep talking about this, but you know, he's not that tall. Like, I know Draymond's height is probably exaggerated, but Justice is even more exaggerated. Like, they list him at what, 6'7", right? But he's far from that. He's maybe 6'4" at best.
But he's got like that strength. He definitely has like some lower body strength that helps him. I mean, yeah, he got out-rebounded by Bismack Biyombo. You can't play him at center all the time, but the fact that he was even able to do it, and I think just even calling him center for those 2 games is I'm using that term loosely,
Yeah, it
but
doesn't matter. The fifth guy on the floor, basically.
exactly. And Miami ran so many switches with him. I mean, there was multiple plays, but one in particular where Winslow started on Kyle Lowry, just stopped Kyle Lowry in his tracks, couldn't even get past the top of the key. Lowry just couldn't get by him. So Lowry was forced to dribble handoff to DeMar DeRozan, and then Winslow got switched onto DeMar DeRozan after that handoff, and then did the same exact thing to DeMar DeRozan. DeRozan couldn't get by him. He had to give the ball up, and then he gave it to some perimeter shooter who took a contested three, and it didn't go in, and that was it. That was the possession. I mean, that entire defensive possession was dictated by Justice Winslow, and just for a rookie to do that against Toronto's best two players in one
Right.
possession without fouling, I mean, he didn't foul DeRozan or Lowry, who got to the line multiple times in that game, was just
And completely
amazing.
different, yeah, completely different styles of play. Like, Lowry's much more short, more bulldog, and stronger built, quicker. DeRozan's lanky, and for him to be able to guard both, and then somehow be able to switch to a physical, beast like Biombo, who might not be as tall as Valanciunas or Whiteside, but what is he, like 6'9", 6'10"? He's still built like a truck. I mean, he's an incredible physical specimen, and he's clearly, for Winslow to be able to stay with that wide range of players bodes well for his defensive versatility. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that moving forward. So that's a great addition to the team.
Yeah, and just having the two rookies gaining all that experience, I mean, you would think that their roles on the team would just continue to increase, but the Heat have so many questions going into this offseason, and I guess now's a good time to kind of move on to talking to about some of those questions, and might as well just start with Chris Bosh. I mean, Brian Windhorst for ESPN put out a story after the game last night that the Heat and Chris Bosh have some decisions to make. I mean, that's obvious, but also mentioned how kind of went into some of the particulars of it, like Bosch's contract can't come off the books until February of 2017 because he stopped playing, you know, he played his last game in February of 2016. So that comes into play. Do the Heat even bother trying to get him on the floor before then, before February 2017? Because if they do, it just resets that entire year cycle. And the reason that matters is because after a year of not playing, the Heat could potentially have his contract come off the book as a medical retirement.
Right. Where they pay him the full contract anyway, right? I
They
think.
pay him
And
the full
then.
contract, but insurance gets involved. But that's just kind of that's Mickey Arison's problem. I think the most important thing is that his contract doesn't hurt the cap.
Right. So that they'd be free to sign anybody. So, yeah. So that impacts summer plans vastly. But even still, I guess it's something that would be mentioned in any conversation they have with any free agent that they pursue.
Yeah, I think it would have to, right? If
Right.
that if
Like
that
you.
player really cares about winning, that then they're gonna be wondering what's up with Bosch.
Yeah, you either have to tell them the optimistic outlook is we plan, as apparently Dan Le Batard confirmed on air this morning via a text he received from someone in the Heat front office. The plan is that Chris Bosh will at some point play again for Miami. So now that's a little bit of a disparity also between the Windhorst story, and maybe both of them aren't necessarily mutually exclusive. Maybe they're optimistic that he can play. But as Windhorst reported, there are concerns that he might never play again. And I don't know if that's necessarily a news story, considering we've been talking about that for months now. But that's always been a concern, I think, for us,
Yeah,
is that, you know.
I don't think the two are mutually exclusive. I think that's true. The plan is for Bosch to play again. It just we don't know if he can.
Right. So, yeah, and they'll work towards that. I think the player, even Windhorst reports that, even the player, the team, the players' union, physicians, independent ones, you know, everybody's going to be actively involved in trying to get Bosch back on the court and healthy. And that's not going to happen until he is cleared to play by a wide number, again, of independent resources who will go on record and saying, yeah, he's good to play. So that's got to be the approach, I guess, with free agencies, that you tell him, we think he's going to play. You can join a team with Chris Bosch there. Or conversely, if they find out something in the next month or two before the free agency period starts, then it's whether or not he's definitely going to come off the book. So maybe we pay you a little less in year one, but we definitely pay you a shit ton in year two. I mean, I can imagine that they'd have to structure a contract somewhat like that. I don't know. I don't know if that's possible, right? But I mean, they certainly could have a bump take place in year two or so. Or maybe even like a guy like Whiteside, where they could say, take less money in year one this year, sign a 2-year deal maybe with a player option or something like that. And then if Chris Bosh does wind up retiring and his salary comes off the book, then you play 1 year with Miami, we'll pay you $10 million. And then and after that year, when his salary comes off the books, then we'll give you a lot more money. And then you can stay part of this franchise for the next few years or whatever.
Yeah, that would have to be how it's structured. It would have to be like a 1-year deal, maybe with a player option for 2 years. That would be the only one to take like a drastic bump because I think you can only if you can only go up between 4.5% and 7.5% year to
Oh,
year.
I didn't know. Okay, yeah, I thought I remembered that, but yeah, I guess it's not possible.
But you're right. Like it would be well, no, if you sign a player to like a 1-year deal and just have them and then give them that player option so it's in their hands for a year and then say like, look, we'll pay you this. The year after, our plan is to pay you more, even though that's not technically legal to say that, but whatever. Like, the Heat have always been good at nudging the rules. So,
But
that
that
would
would
be.
only work with a guy like Whiteside, right? Like, I mean, somebody who's already here, who. If he leaves this summer or next summer, it's not really much of a difference. It's not like you're not going to lure a guy like Al Horford, who's going to be willing to take a flyer in a 1-year deal, or a guy like Kevin Durant to take a 1-year deal.
The problem would be like, the Heat could technically sign Whiteside and still have Bosch to a max, you know what I mean? So, or
Sure.
to a near max. So, it would almost have to be somebody like in addition to Whiteside. So, if the Heat were able to clear McRoberts off the cap by trading him, maybe they don't bring back Luol Deng or Joe Johnson, then maybe you have like another like B-level free agent come in and be like, "Hey, like we're gonna like a young free agent and say we're gonna pay you this on a 1 year." But if Bosch doesn't come back, you're going to do that. I still don't see how. I don't know. That's a very particular situation. I don't even know what kind of player would be down to do that. But I think in general, this whole situation with Chris Bosh affects Kevin Durant, because if you're Durant, do you look at the Heat and say, like, I don't know if Bosh is going to be healthy? Dwayne Wade is 34. He played great, but he's getting older. Like, if you're looking at the Heat and you're Durant, do you see the Heat as a better option than Oklahoma City, who's going to, tip off with the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals later tonight? Or, even a team like the Celtics, who have rebuilt around a bunch of young core players, and maybe there's not really a question of where their roster is right now as far as health. I don't know, like, that Bosch situation really comes into play when it when in regards to Durant's free agency, because Durant's
Yeah.
not joining a Heat team that doesn't have Chris Bosch.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think if you had asked me that a few weeks ago, I've talked to you about it before, and I've always thought that Miami was an interesting option for KD, but having made the moves that they did and proving, I mean, I quite honestly, I had no expectation of being able to advance past San Antonio, but proving that they could advance past the Spurs shows that there is that talent there and that they're just finding a way to become cohesive at just the right time. I mean, they're likely not going to be able to knock off Golden State because Golden State is really historically good. But other than that, you have to give some credit to Billy Donovan in his first year and certainly to the players on the Thunder roster for coalescing into this really strong group that's shown they could knock off a quality, historically good team like the San Antonio Spurs too. I mean, and when you look at the two separate rosters, they have questions in Oklahoma City, particularly in a year when Westbrook's and Ibaka's contract comes up. But other than that, they've got a good young, nucleus there. Westbrook and Durant are similarly aged. And his Cantor and Steven Adams are both really young
Dion
and signed
Waiters.
for, yeah. Well, he's a free agent, so I
Oh, that's
mean,
true. Well, they're gonna max him out.
Where do you stand? I don't think you and I have ever talked about the Dion Waiters situation. Where do you stand on that?
I don't know. I don't know. Dion Waiters is strange. I like him being in the league, but I don't want him on the Heat. That's where I stand.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. Well, kind of, sorta. It's like if you guys had fun watching Mario Chalmers, then prepare yourself some for real, real, real good times because that's the kind of guy Dion Waiters is. And you and I, we've talked about it before, but for our listeners that don't know my affiliation with the Thunder before, I actually had a chance to cover the team as the editor over at Thunder's Intentions, and then I was able to cover my first game covering any locker room situation was when Dion had just joined the team and they had a really, really, really good, historically good showing against Orlando where they scored the most points ever in the first half of the franchise history. It was just a blowout and by every stretch. And Dion had a really good game. And there he is on a team with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, and he's commanding the locker room wearing nothing but a towel and as confident, as cocky as could be. And it was just like, wow, this guy's amazing. Like all the rumors and stories and everything you'd heard about him in Cleveland were perfectly proven. And it was just amazing to watch. And then to see him over the course of the season just put up every disastrous shot and yell out and one after every one, it's just glorious basketball, to be honest with you. It's
So
just amazing.
if you're not on Waiters Island now, listeners, I don't know what will get
Yeah, hurry up while you still can because rates are low now. But
you
following this series against the Warriors, where he shows to the world his true value, hey, it's going to be tight finding a place. So,
It's a good investment
get while the
opportunity.
getting's good. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Get the beachfront properties while they still exist.
Well, it is an island, man.
Yeah.
Everywhere is beachfront property.
True. It's a great island.
It is. It's the best.
So yeah, I mean, when you are on a team with Waiters and Westbrook and Steven Adams and all these guys, I mean, I think you also have to give credit to Durant, because I think against the Spurs, especially after that disaster that game one was, it could have been easy for Durant to just kind of not tank it, but not necessarily rise to the level that he did. You know what I mean? He could have just went with the status quo and made any decision this summer really easy for himself.
Didn't the Cavaliers make that same claim about a certain player in 2010?
It's crazy how stark the contrast is there, but Durant could have done that, right? Like, he could have just said, "We don't have what it takes to play even the Spurs or the Warriors these next few years. I need to make a change for myself." But he didn't. He played some of the best basketball he's ever played. rose to the occasion and got the Thunder out of that, and he was the best player in that series, and got the Thunder past the Spurs. And I think that he gets some credit for that. So regardless of even if he leaves the Thunder, which looks unlikely to me now,
Right.
that the Heat would be able to sign him with Bosch's health in question just seems like a this whole idea. Basically, what I'm trying to say is Durant coming to the Heat, the odds are very slim to none.
I mean, and
So.
that's not to say that Miami isn't an interesting option. Again, if you find a way to convince KD that Bosch's numbers or his overall contract is not going to impact the team in the future, and somehow you're able to get Whiteside on a good deal, you'd have to say that there are some interesting options here. Jay Rich, Winslow, and if you're able to re-sign Whiteside, you know that Pat Riley is going to continue to get some key players here and there in the future. Goran
Right.
Dragic is a good, share first kind of point guard who can have some really spectacular moments there. I think, there is enough to entice KD. I just don't know at this point. Having seen what Oklahoma City has done in the Western Conference playoffs, I don't know if it's a better option in Miami than what they currently have in Oklahoma City.
Don't mean to correct you, but you mentioned Whiteside. It's they're not going to be able to have Whiteside and Durant, probably. But.
Mean, let's be optimistic here.
Okay, sure. But yeah, I think if you're Riley, that your message is we've done it with LeBron. We'll have Bosch back. He'll play the five. You'll play. I don't know if you could tell Durant that he's going to play the four, but he'll play small forward still. They'll find a. Maybe Justice Winslow plays power forward. You have Dragic. You have Wade. You have good young players like you said, Tyler Johnson, Josh Richardson. But then, Riley does what the Thunder haven't done. The Thunder typically try to flesh out the rest of the roster with young guys with potential who maybe can go beyond and above their contracts, but don't really do so. That's been the idea, but not necessarily how it's been delivered. While the Heat, when they had LeBron, they just kept signing veterans who knew how to play in the playoffs, who knew what their roles were, where you didn't have to coach them up, where you can rely on them when you needed to, and that could be the difference between the Heat and the Thunder is like we're gonna sign a bunch of veterans around you so that you can lead a team of veterans as opposed to trying to deal with some young players who don't necessarily know what the hell it is that they're doing. That could be intriguing, but yeah. But we mentioned Whiteside. We can talk about Hassan Whiteside. Barry Jackson today for the Miami Herald had a good piece basically breaking it down Whiteside's situation and specifically what it would mean to sign him to a max or near max deal. And, people talk about like the lack of income tax, state income tax in Florida and how that matters. And, we kind of throw that around as a bargaining tool, but don't really talk about what that really means financially. And he threw out this good number that even if I think, what was it, when Carmelo Anthony was a free agent last year? That if he were to sign in Miami, for example, for the maximum money that he could sign, which is not the maximum that the Knicks could sign him to because of bird rights, that he'd still make $4 million more in Miami, despite his contract being $4 million less than what the Knicks would sign him. Does that make sense? Did I explain that right?
Yes.
Okay, so which is amazing. I mean, you're thinking like you're not. It's a bit. It's about an $8 million swing. Just because of the lack of income tax. So if money is involved, that certainly has to come into play. Which also means that the Heat can sign Whiteside to a near max deal and still pay him more bottom line after taxes and everything than any other team in the NBA other than a team in Texas. Right?
Yeah.
So, or the Orlando Magic. And the reason I say that is because Florida and Texas don't have state income taxes. So, that comes into play because we talk about Whiteside and how he's, played overseas and he's making less than $1 million this season and how he's the biggest bargain in the NBA right now and how, money is going to matter for him this offseason in one form or the other. So that matters, I think. So that's a significant bargaining chip for Miami. And I think, in general, Whiteside didn't, I don't think he lived up to expectations against the Hornets and the Raptors. Obviously he was injured for the last four games, against the last three or four games against the Raptors, and then struggled at times against Charlotte. Though I do think those last couple games he came along. But overall, do you think he's worth the near max? for the Heat?
That's a tough question to answer, right?
Yeah.
I think he is, but that doesn't mean I'd like to see him receive that from the team, or I wouldn't like to see the team pay him that much. I'd like him. I'd like them to be able to re-sign him for less. But I think, you know, I'm all for players getting as much money as they possibly can get wherever they can get it. But it doesn't seem like it's beneficial for Miami for him to get that kind of money here. And I think he's worth that. As I mean, when you look at his overall impact, the way he affects shots and the numbers that he does put up, I think he's deserving of the contract. I don't know if he'll get that offer from Miami. It seems very unlikely that they would, to be honest with you. So, I mean, you have to realistically think that he's played his last game for the Heat.
Yeah, I don't think that we can rule that out. I mean, if you consider signing Whiteside to that, then you're basically admitting that you're going to be building around Whiteside. But they've already re-signed Goran Dragic. They've already signed Chris Bosh to that, you know, huge contract that he's signed to. And that's a whole other situation that we've already talked about. But if you sign somebody young like that, like Whiteside, given the state that this team currently is in, then you're kind of saying that we're building around Whiteside. So maybe Whiteside's worth this next year. But do you really want to lock yourself into Whiteside for 4 or 5 years and build around him and sign players and draft players with the intent of making them fit with Whiteside? Because right now, this, I think White, if you put a team, if you just built a team from scratch with Whiteside at center, the best version you can do is probably like those Dwight Howard Orlando Magic teams. It's just a 4-out system with, you know, the center in the middle.
Right, and you're not going to have that with Wade and Dragic shooting the way they do from the perimeter.
Exactly. So that's the situation that the Heat have to be in. Now, Whiteside is effective because he's at times dominant on both sides of the court. But I don't know if you hit your wagon saying this is the way we want to play.
Right.
I think Chris Bosh's situation is majorly influential in this, because if you think he's healthy, then maybe you slide him back to center. You let Whiteside walk. You re-sign Luol Deng, and now you play this small ball system, which kind of almost makes up for the lack of shooting. Hey, maybe Wade's suddenly a 3-point shooter, and all of this is good because now Wade can hit 3-point shots.
That seems a little unlikely.
Yeah. So
just a little.
Just a little. But you know, is he worth that money? Yeah. Is he worth building? Can the Heat build around him? I don't know.
Well, I mean, let's okay. Where do you stand on it? Like, I mean, I'd like for him to re-sign here, but given that argument about how he fits into the long-term plans, it's probably best that they don't. And I know that part of that is, you know, the question mark hanging over Chris Bosh. But even still, then, I mean, let's say if Chris Bosh is just going to be an unfortunate, you know, salary cap burden on the team. Do you want to add another one around a guy who's not really going to have much more of an impact than what we've seen already? Yeah, he's sure he's going to block shots. A lot of those might be empty. He's going to affect some shots. You know, is there room for him to grow offensively? Is he going to continue to do so? Is the contract going to placate him to the point where he's going to quit developing? Is he going to feel like he's entitled now if he gets that money? And part mm-hmm. of what's driven him up to this point is the fact that he didn't have the lucrative contract. Once he gets that, is he going to be the kind of player that you can build around? I mean, there are a lot of questions there, and I know it's unfair to judge him, you know, on his emotions or his intelligence or how he responds to it from a personality standpoint. But, you know, those are real things that you have to consider. Right. You don't want to toss money at him and have him not live up to that contract expectation. So I'm going to say that given that he's probably worth a lot of money, I would prefer that Miami finds a way to move on.
I'm gonna answer your question, but just to, I mean, we thought, like you mentioned, do you sign him to that much money, and now is he placated with that? Does he say, okay, I got my max deal, I'm not gonna try to get better? To me, and it's hard to like get into somebody's head, but Whiteside's kind of been about the glory, it seems like, or maybe not the glory, but the. His reputation, like he just wants people to know that he's good. Like, he's all about his, you know, he mentioned a 2K rating before he's ever mentioned his contract, right? Like, that's just weird. But it's almost like he just wants you to know that he's good. I mean, he was upset about not getting Defensive Player of the Year. So I think that he'll still be going after that. Like, he wants people to know that how good he is, or he wants people to know how good he thinks he is. So I don't think that money will jeopardize that. I think he's still going to work at getting better. I think that getting him to work in the right areas is the trick, and it is something that the Eric Spoelstra and the Heat have shown that they're able to do, to guide him in the right direction with Bosch and Alonzo Mourning involved. I think they've showed that they're able to kind of guide him on the right roads and figure that out.
Can I ask you a potential question here?
Sure.
Well, not a potential question, but a question about a player's potential. Would you rather have Miami sign him for 18, 20 million or bring in a guy like Festus Ezeli for 12 to 15?
I still
Well,
think the
I
situation
messed you up,
with,
huh?
well, it's a good question. I mean, the question with Azealia is, yeah, he can run. He has experience in small ball type teams that, you know, focus on ball movement. That's good. I'd rather keep Whiteside.
Wow.
If the difference is like
5 million a
3 to
year.
5 million a year, I'd still keep Whiteside because I'm a big Festus Ezeli fan. He's got injury concerns, major injury concerns. I think, you know, coming from the Warriors to a lesser team like the Heat, even though it might not be a lesser organization, that comes into play. Asking him to play a much bigger role and to step into the shoes that Whiteside had would be kind of tough. I think if the Heat moved on from Whiteside, I'd rather them go in an entirely different direction and just almost remodel its team after like a team like the Celtics or something, where you don't really, you might not have a true center starting. You might have one on the roster as a reserve, for situations, but you know, you're looking for somebody maybe more like a Kelly Olynyk or Chris Bosh playing at center and looking for a stretch forward to pair along with him. That would be where I'd rather go. I'd rather not. I don't think it's worth saving the $5 million for the other red flags that Festus Ezeli has for me. Like, Ezeli's not a long-term starter. I don't know. Like, he's good offensively and defensively, but can he sustain those things over starters' minutes? I mean, I think he can, but those are more red flags. I don't think that he's as solid enough to be like, we'll take $5 million less. We'll pay $5 million less for this solid player, because I don't see him as solid. I don't see him as like a guarantee. But it's an interesting question, really. It certainly is. I mean, I always go back to, like, you can't choose your superstars all the time. Like, you know, the Rockets have been in this situation where it's like, you know, can you build a championship around James Harden? I don't know, but you got to try because he's the best player that you were able to get, and he's the best player you can get right now. So that's the best you can do. Not everybody gets blessed with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, right? Not everybody is able to draft Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant within a couple of years of each other. It doesn't. You know, you're not going to get LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and Dwayne Wade to all sign with each other, you know, and try to win multiple championships with each other. You're just not going to get that all the time. You don't get to choose your superstars a lot of times. So the Heat had Whiteside, you know, fall into their lap, so to speak. But and I think you can't just give up on him. I think you have to at least re-sign him, even if it's a max contract. He's worth it, I think, just in a vacuum. So signing him to that. You can always trade him later. I mean, Bosch's situation might not be resolved until next February. That's before the trade deadline, right? Or near the trade deadline. So if it looks like Bosch is coming back and you're ready to move on from Whiteside, you could trade him at the deadline. I mean, he's still going to have value. I don't think you can let him walk for nothing, especially if you're. And all of this is moot. If it sounds like Kevin Durant is coming and Pat Riley wants to put all his chips on Kevin Durant, that's fine. But let's just say that doesn't happen. I don't know what player you're getting this year that's going to be better than Whiteside. So I think you re-sign Whiteside and then just see how it all falls into place. Because who knows how much longer Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh have left. I think Dragic and Whiteside could play together. I don't see that as an issue. I don't know. I just think you got to keep the good players, and he still has so much potential. Like he could be worth more by the trade deadline, depending on how he gets better. If he gets better than he is this free agency. So, yeah, I think you have to re-sign him. I don't think you can let him walk for nothing. I think you have to re-sign him.
Okay.
But it's an interesting question because now, like you brought up with Festus Ezeli, maybe you let him walk and maybe you don't get Kevin Durant. You could sign like three players for what, like three good players for what you'd pay Whiteside.
Sure.
I mean, that's a worthy question. If you think that the trio of Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, and Goran Dragic, and the young players like Winslow and Richardson is enough to win a championship with, two or three good role players, which could just be bringing back Luol Deng and Joe Johnson, maybe one other player.
I don't know if you'd bring back both.
Yeah, I'm not sure you would, but that could be the situation. I don't know. There's a lot of questions. Like, there's a lot of alternatives. Do you sign another near max player instead of Whiteside? Do you sign a few players instead of Whiteside? I mean, I think the idea of re-signing Whiteside, if the Heat don't get Durant, they re-sign Whiteside, is a little. I don't think that's necessarily what is the plan. I just think that that's probably the best case scenario.
Wow, there's so much to think about.
There
It's like
really is.
the more we talk about it, the more I wind up thinking I have no idea what the hell's going to happen. And I'm seriously developing a headache as we're talking about this right now, because my mind's split in like 15 different ways about who we can bring in and all these different options and players. And for some people, that's really exciting, but at the same time, it's just absolute chaos in my mind right now.
I mean, just think about like there's players like Nicholas Batum who people are
Sure.
saying get like a near max deal. I mean, isn't Chandler Parsons a free agent?
He sure is.
Like, wouldn't like a ball handling swing forward like that work in Miami and help transform Miami into like maybe a more spacey team, a team that maybe thrives more in space pick and rolls and gives them a little bit more perimeter shooting. Like, what if you let Whiteside walk and you're able to re-sign Luol Deng to play the four or Chandler Parsons to play small forward or whatever it might be, or I don't know,
Well,
like.
he's got a player option on his contract, apparently. So he could opt out and then choose to take more, or he could, keep whatever money he's getting from Dallas. Apparently, he made 15.3 last year. So, I mean, his contract won't be cheap. If he opts out, clearly he'd expect to get, a deal worth maybe more than that, 16, 17, maybe a 4-year deal for, let's say, something comparable to what Dragic got. I mean, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, you'd probably have you Parsons could probably command a little bit of money, but yeah, I don't envy being in Pat Riley's situation right now. And what's funny is that we said before the playoffs that this is going to be a real chance to see what Whiteside, how Whiteside can impact this team in a playoff situation, which is ultimately what matters for guys like Riley. But the Hornets series was a very tough matchup for him. Like I said, he did come along in those last couple games. I thought he played really, really great defense in game 6 and 7 against the Hornets. But then he got hurt so early in the Raptors series, and before he got hurt, he was getting dominated by Jonas Valanciunas. The Heat probably didn't see as much of Whiteside as they would have liked because he was injured, but when they did see him, they probably didn't see what they wanted to see either. So that, given all the potential that he has, that's got to be tough. It's going to be a really tough situation for them.
How they handle it will probably speak volumes of what kind of faith they have in him as a player. Whether or not he gets the immediate attention, whether or not they even make a lucrative offer, whether or not they're just content to see how or what kind of offers he receives out in the market and then just choose to let him walk. I mean, they may look, they've seen more of him than any other team, every other team in the NBA. So if they've got If anybody has a complete book on what kind of player he's liable to become, it's Miami. They've worked with him, they've developed him to this point, they've seen him through his good and bad moments. So that's an interesting question. It's like for them to be able to gauge his personality and his potential, they may surprise us completely and say, "Look, we've seen him. We know he's the future. We're willing to throw as much money as it takes to keep him." That seems unlikely. But that seems like that would speak a lot about, him as a player and him as a person and how they judge him moving forward.
Yeah, and then that would bring up those whole other questions. How do you build around Whiteside? So,
Yeah, well, I mean, you figure that they have a plan. I
yeah.
mean, they know what they want to do, whether, I mean, I know the Chris Bosh question certainly throws everything off, but I mean, I think that's just the reality. So let's say the optimistic end of the spectrum is that they expect Chris Bosh to play. He's going to be part of the team moving forward. And if that's the case, then I mean, I just don't see how you can consider bringing back Whiteside either, though. I don't know. It's so
I'm glad
tough
you
to
hit on
figure out.
that. Because the Bosch and Whiteside together, didn't really coalesce the way we hoped it would, right?
Right.
It didn't really work. And I always thought that if you brought Whiteside back, I loved when they had Stoudemire, and you know this, and I've been saying this on the podcast, I loved Amari Stoudemire starting and Whiteside coming off the bench. I thought that the rotation was cleaner. Because you had those core three of Winslow, Richardson, and Whiteside coming off the bench, and I thought that was very useful and clean, and as much as Eric Spoelstra's rotations are so not clean so often.
Yeah, played at a higher pace, it seemed, and then Whiteside was able to dominate against lower centers. I mean, I think it worked out really well for them. Part of the reason why they made it to the playoffs the way they did.
Exactly, and if you feel like Bosch is able to play again, I always thought the future of this team was Bosch starting at center and Whiteside coming off the bench, if he was down for it. I don't see how you sign a player to a near-max deal and bring him off
and
the bench.
And his canter.
Yeah, that's true. And his canter would do it. I don't know if Whiteside would do it. Whiteside wasn't he didn't like being on the bench. He was always told that he was going to be inserted back into the starting lineup at some point. And, I mean, remind me, though, when the Thunder re-signed Canter, did Canter know that he was going to be coming off the bench? I mean, he must have assumed, but...
No, he was starting... Actually, no, I'm sorry. He was coming off the bench when they acquired him via trade, but at that point he wasn't... I mean, I don't think he was nearly as productive. And then Steven Adams got hurt for a little bit, so I think Canter started, and then Adams was brought off the bench until he was healthy enough, and then they missed the playoffs. So it was a very, very small sample size. You know, and again, it was without Kevin Durant, who you could have at the four. So their lineups were twisted in a particular way. They couldn't really do everything they wanted to with him. But then there was a question about, you know, there was a lot of questions about whether or not he would start during the offseason. You know, people projected him to start and then have Adams come off the bench. It worked out better for them to have. And, you know, the thing was that with Oklahoma City, you've already got one starter in there, Andre Roberson, who's so bad offensively. Right. That you kind of need somebody who's a little bit more gifted offensively, but they're willing to roll the dice with Adams, who has potential offensively. Now, I mean, if you have, I mean, it's not the same thing with Whiteside, I guess, but, you know, he's not as one-dimensional as a guy like Roberson or Cantor, although Cantor's played solid defense in the playoffs.
Yeah, so I don't even know if that works, because as far as the Bosch-Whiteside thing goes, I mean, I think if you're the Heat, you bank on them figuring it out. Because I don't see how you could bring them off the bench, or maybe
it's better to have Whiteside come off the bench and have Bosch, if he's available, start.
I agree. I just don't know how you sell that to Whiteside.
I mean, does it matter? I mean, maybe he's willing to accept it. If he's going to get paid, because Miami somehow finds a way to get Wade on the cheap and throw a significant amount of money at Whiteside, and he's comfortable here, he's happy here, he likes the organization, he likes everybody on his team, whatever. He doesn't want to go back to, you know, North Carolina or anything like that. He's happy and he wants to take less money. Maybe he would be content with it. I mean, you're right. There's always been a part of him that likes chasing bigger numbers and showing everybody, look at my numbers. I've got huge numbers. I mean, there's something to be said for that, and you can't dismiss it altogether, but maybe he's willing to say, this is the next step of my development and I'm going to get paid regardless. Maybe I don't have to prove everything with numbers. But then you wonder how much of his impact will take a dip. There's so many questions with him. As many questions as there are about Chris Bosh's future and his health, Whiteside's personality, and again, if anybody knows what it's like more than Miami, nobody knows what it's like more than Miami, but it defines a lot of how they move forward, because, you know, they don't know if he's going to take that money and run or just give up or not be as productive. It's so difficult to project exactly how it's going to work out.
And the bigger question overall is, what does Miami want its identity to be moving forward? I mean, you're paying Dragic a max amount of money. I mean, Dwayne Wade's the face of the franchise. Whiteside, Bosch. I mean, to retain both of them, you're both paying them max deals, basically. And then these fringe players like Luol Deng, who's been so useful for the Heat, especially in the playoffs. Joe Johnson, who was was great for them after they acquired them after the All-Star break. I mean, Winslow, Richardson as the young guys, how do you continue to give them more involvement on the team and not bury them on the roster? Do you want Winslow to start next year? I mean, there's so many... What's the identity of this team? Because for this entire season, I mean, if we could define the Heat's 2015-16 season, I think it would be, you know, maybe overachieving is one, because I think they overachieved, which is a credit to Eric Spoelstra and the coaching staff. But also a lack of identity, just because of the personnel and all the changes that happened and the weird injuries and everything and all the situations that came up during the season. You know, this team never really established what it did. I mean, it was slow, it was fast, it was small, it was big. I mean, you never knew what it was going to, like, you just, it didn't have one constant identity. So
we talked about that before the start of the season, even though we didn't know what kind of team this was going to be. You know, that with a guy like Whiteside out there, you know, you can't stretch the floor as much as you'd like to. You know, you're going to be more low post oriented, et cetera. This is, the injuries had changed everything and you had to kind of rebuild an identity. Maybe that's what they want to do moving forward. And then, like, I'm thinking about it in that same context about, like, the youth movement. Clearly, there's some good youth, you know, young pieces on the team. But that's not who Pat Riley is. I mean, they had that in 2003, and he was willing to trade off Lamar Odom and others for a chance at two good years of Shaquille O'Neal. And I think Pat Riley would do the same thing given his situation, because it wound up resulting in a championship. So, you know, he'd rather get older veterans than younger players that might be able to be acquired cheaper.
In which case, would mean what for Winslow and Richardson? Because I don't know.
They're going to be complementary young players to a team that's still going to be a veteran core.
I mean, I don't know.
I don't think Riley and Spoelstra can be wired any other way at this point. I think they're still going to put their faith in a veteran core, and despite the obvious boost that you're going to get from guys like Winslow, Richardson, Tyler Johnson, and others that you might be able to acquire here and there, I think you're still going to put most of your faith in the older players.
I think the way they talk about Winslow and Richardson, though, is that they talk about them like vets. I think that they're willing to secede some of that for Winslow and Richardson. I think that they value them as much. And they talked about how much these playoffs mean to their development. I think they view them as ready, but it's hard to know.
So you project Winslow as a starter?
I don't know. I think that to me depends on his development in regards to his 3-point shot. I think if he can become a reliable just like a 40% 3-point shooter, just not as bad as he was, then I think, 40% is pretty good. Like a 35% would be fine, right? Just like not as bad as he was. I think if he starts showing that growth, then I think you can make him a starter. I think his defense is terrific, and he showed that defense could be vastly valuable as a starter in those last couple of games against the Raptors. I mean, you put him on the opposing team's best player from the start, that makes a difference. I don't know. I think the Heat right now, I think the whole point of this offseason is to really establish an identity. It's so hard to do that during the season when you have so many moving pieces, but you have a chance right now to reflect, sit back, and decide what you want to do, especially with so many players. I mean, Whiteside, Dang, and Johnson are all coming off the books. Wade's contract has expired. Like, what do you do with all these things? It's a big question. It almost reminds me of where the Charlotte Hornets were last offseason, where they had to make some changes. They said they decided that they wanted to be a more modern basketball team with some more 3-point shooting and more perimeter oriented, players on the team and stuff like that. And they made some changes. And part of that was Al Jefferson coming off the bench. Maybe Whiteside's willing to do a similar move, although Al Jefferson was later in his career than Whiteside was, but still, there's a lot of things that come into play here, and now's the time to do it. So It's going to be fascinating, I think, this entire offseason.
I can't imagine. You figure a big splash is in order, right? They're going to be able to, let's say, clearly I think Durant is their top target. From that point forward, how they move into their next tier of top free agents that they want to bring in will say a lot about how they see the future of the team. But barring that, maybe there's some possibility of trades. Mm-hmm. Would Pat Riley be willing to ship out Goran Dragic and Josh McRoberts and others maybe to acquire another superstar that could build their team in a particular way? I think that he would.
It's a good question. I mean, and there's other free agents too besides Whiteside and Durant. I mean, Al Horford. What if the Heat suddenly just tried to, build in an insurance policy in case Bosch isn't able to come back and they just try to sign Al Horford? I mean, I think Al Horford and Bosch in the same front court, could work. And if Bosch can't come back, at least you have a Bosch light in Al Horford. I mean,
And
Ryan Anderson is
not
an
even
interesting
particularly
stretch
light
forward.
either. Oh, I don't know, man. Because he Anderson, he just because of his defense, I don't know that you
That's
can.
true. I mean, but there's like, I don't know. There's other big name free agents. I mean, Nicholas Batum has been mentioned. Don't know.
Are you high on them acquiring Durant?
I mean, if they can get Durant, I think that's the number one move. I think that's transformative.
Yeah, I think I st and if you could somehow get Bosch to come back, a starting lineup of Bosch, Durant, Wade, Dragic, and Justice Winslow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
That's
as good
killer.
a lineup as you're gonna get.
Yeah, I agree. I think, they could do that. That's going to be very reminiscent of the Big Three era Heat. Because Bosch plays center, it's a little bit more spacey. I think that works. If they can't get Durant, I think, how do you, you can noticeably see Eric Spoelstra, I think, more comfortable coaching a team that played a faster pace, right? And Goran Dragic is very valuable in at least establishing pace. When he's playing his best, he can dictate the pace of a game, like a true point guard would, just like control the tempo and things like that. I think he's very valuable in that regard, but that doesn't change like the weird struggles that Wade and Dragic have in that backcourt. Do you move Wade to small forward, almost like Kobe started moving to small forward later in those couple years of his career? Maybe put Josh Richardson in at shooting guard. I don't know. Like there's like, and then you just rely on Wade, like almost like the Heat use Joe Johnson, where you just post him up and let him do his thing. I mean, it's interesting. I think no matter what, Wade's always going to try to bring the ball down the court a few times a game, but if you almost nominally move him down a peg in the lineup, that naturally opens up the spacing as long as you replace him with another wing player. So if you have like a Dragic, Richardson, Wade, perimeter lineup with Bosch and Winslow. I mean, I'm sorry, Bosch and Whiteside. Maybe that works. Maybe that spaces things out a little bit more. I don't know. There's just so many questions.
We keep saying
I
that, and
know.
it's tough for anybody listening to us to say, well, what the hell are we talking about? But it's like there are so many questions around Bosch. I mean, and then even just thinking about it as who you pursue, it's like you're talking about if you commit, if you find how somehow might wind up getting Chris Bosch to come back, and then you wind up committing to Kevin Durant because you can and he's willing to come here. And if that's one particular form of play, and I think that's a great team, obviously that would be a great lineup with Kevin Durant in it. But if you can't get Durant, then you're talking about a multitude of different
Right.
options as to how you want to take your team, Do you want to go small? Do you still somehow get, Chris Bosh in there and go with another potential swingman who can play the power forward a little bit? Do you want to promote, Justice Winslow? Do you want to, like you said, shift Wade maybe to the small forward position, maybe bring in a two guard who can maybe bring in DeMar DeRozan? I mean, that's
Right.
a possibility, right? I mean, it would be a little odd, I guess, but there are options. So, I mean, too many. So it's very difficult to project until we know for certain whether or not they see Bosch as a long-term fixture.
Well, as we often do on this podcast, we bring up way more questions than answers. Is anything else you want to add? Any other lingering questions that you have about this offseason? I mean, Dave Fizdale could be gone. Who knows?
Yeah, that seems less likely, right? I
Yeah,
mean,
it does seem less likely now,
I
but.
don't know why. There's so many other positions that are being filled and guys that are being interviewed. Maybe now that the Heat season's over, maybe he takes a chance somewhere. I mean, Orlando has a possibility there that we didn't expect him to have. So we wonder what happens next with Fizdale. But
Amar'e Stoudemire could be gone. I mean, he was
yeah,
talking. I
I
don't know
talked
how much
about
that
that
matters.
earlier.
Yeah.
I don't know how much of a big deal it was,
It's.
right? I mean, his comments.
I don't think it was a big deal. I mean,
I
I
think you're
was
taking it out
talking
of
with.
context.
I think it's taken out of context a little bit. I don't think anybody should be mad about it. That's the thing. It shouldn't be like this weird, like, oh, he wasn't like whatever. Like, I don't know. I was talking with Caron Butler earlier this season. He said basically the same thing to me. He was like,
Look at
I
you
thought I
name
was
dropping. Look at you name dropping.
name dropping. Yeah, I was talking to, yeah, and he, I think I mentioned it in the piece I wrote, but he even mentioned like I thought I'd be playing more. But
Yeah, you did,
it's
actually.
hard to take a step back. It's and when you sign a contract and you're still a player in the NBA. You're not an assistant coach. Yeah. You're not like, you know, you're not this legacy thing. Like this, you're signing to find, like, you know, playing time. Like that's ultimately what you want. And
of course, I mean, I think that's the whole thing. It's like no player is going to be asked whether or not they want to play less and just sit there and collect a paycheck. It's like, this is all they've been doing for most of their lives. Of course they want to play. They want to contribute. They want the glory and everything else that comes with it. You know?
I don't think Stoudemire wants starters minutes. I don't think he even necessarily wants 15 minutes a game. I think the problem was just the irregularity of it. Like he started, I mean, this is, I looked this up this morning. He started 36 games this season, but was inactive for 30. I mean, he was inactive for almost as many games as he started. I don't know how much irregular you get.
Yeah.
That's an insane number.
Today you're starting and you're not going to play for the next five, you know, games after that. So.
And Spoelstra has a knack for doing that. This isn't just Stoudemire, right? Like, he's got a weird way of, Gerald Green, you're playing four games in a row and then we won't see you for 2 months. Like, it's always been that way with Spoelstra. But, I mean, you can ask Mike Miller, who's probably the you know, knows it more than anybody else. But, you know, I think that's if Stoudemire can go to a team that's promising him 7 to 8 minutes a game, I don't see why. It's not like he's turning down any more money from Miami. He was signed to a minimum contract. I don't think Miami would sign him to anything more than that. So, you know, if he can get a minimum contract or a little bit more anywhere else and get promised 7 to 8 minutes a game, I think that's where he would go, and you can't blame him for that. I mean, I thought he was very valuable for the Heat this season.
What team would offer that, though?
I don't know. There's got to be somebody out there.
Really? I can't picture that. I mean, is he going to go to, like, Philadelphia? Would they want him there? I mean, I can't. I don't know. I just don't see that being a realistic option. I think at this point he has to understand his role, and I think that's the difficult part. And I think the problem from the fan perspective is that here you are having just lost as a team and you're bringing up your own personal issues, which is not getting enough playing time. And so that kind of rubs people the wrong way. And I get that. But, you know, he was also asked the question by a reporter who specifically knew that that was going to be an issue. And you know, it made for good copy. It's all of a sudden you're pissed off. You're demoralized. You just lost the playoffs. You didn't contribute as much as you thought. And somebody sticks a microphone or recorder in your face and asks, well, how do you feel about this season? Are you disappointed you didn't get more playing time? Yeah, I'm disappointed I didn't get more playing time. Oh, next thing you know, that makes headlines. It's like, screw Amar'e Stoudemire, you selfish bastard. Get out of here. And it's like, that's unfair.
It is unfair. Yeah. You're right. Anything else? Any other things that we didn't touch on?
I guess I should just, you know, once again say that I'm very much looking forward to Justice Winslow as the future of the organization, despite my early pronouncement that he was not going to be much of a factor in the NBA.
Luckily for you, the Heat don't have a draft pick, so you don't have to worry about being really wrong about that again.
Oh, you know what? I do want to bring something up, and it's because you mentioned it. You know, the choice to bring in a guy like Briante Weber other than somebody else at the end of the season that might have added some more length and size. You know, do you question the Heat's decision-making process? Do you like Weber as a long-term part of the team moving forward?
So, I mean, I didn't like that decision when they did it before the playoffs started in the first place. And if you're going to, you know, nitpick anything, and I actually had that question written down, so I'm glad you brought it up because we completely skipped over it, but yeah, I think that that was a mistake, signing Briante Weber before the offseason. I mean, I get it. They think that he's got long-term potential, that he could be something for them. But, like, was he signing somewhere else? That's my question. Were the 76ers or somebody going to sign him?
Maybe they didn't expect Tyler Johnson to bounce back, and they thought they'd need a little bit more depth in the backcourt.
That was the other idea, but I just, like, that's why you have Gerald Green, and then you also signed Darrell Wright. I mean, I think that you had enough wing players to get by. I thought that even before the playoffs, even before Whiteside got hurt, it was obvious that this team needed some more size, more traditional type center play, just in case Whiteside got hurt. Because if Whiteside got hurt, the whole everything went to shit after that, and that was obvious before the playoffs even started, and that's exactly what happened. So yeah, I mean, who do you sign? I don't know. Like, maybe you even just bring up one of the centers from the Sioux Falls Skyforce. I mean, what's stopping them from doing that? There had to be a center available that could have been more impactful than Briante Weber, and in having a traditional center that could have come off the bench, Again, I don't know how it would have worked out. I don't know if that player would have been any good for them. I don't know if that player would have even matched up against Bismack Biyombo, who's one of the better reserves in the entire NBA this year. But yeah, I think that was an obvious mistake. If you just, you know, in hindsight, that was a big mistake. What do you think?
You're right, I guess. It's tough to predict, you know, what would have happened. And yeah, maybe you could have seen that that was a bigger, that there was more of a significant drop off once you lose Whiteside as far as overall talent and depth. You know, Udonis was able to contribute, Stoudemire was able to contribute, but not a sustained level. And even if you had just made that decision based on Charlotte's backcourt, maybe you thought you'd need somebody a little bit more defensive minded to handle either Walker or Lynn. You know, he didn't play. It's not like he was a factor at all. And right. You could have made that same justification for bringing in a center, looking at, you know, Kaminsky and Zeller and Jefferson, you know, so there were options there. And I don't know. I'm not quite sure. I guess maybe they thought they'd need somebody more perimeter based for later matchups. It's hard to tell exactly what their line of thinking was, but maybe it wasn't the right decision.
They must have figured that with Haslam, Stoudemire, and McRoberts, somebody would have stepped up, which wasn't the case. I mean, it just... McRoberts, I thought, played a little bit better, but it was just... Yeah, I don't know. Overall, I don't think it would have made a massive difference having a center that nobody else wanted to sign for the entire regular season on the roster in the 15th man spot, but I did think it was a little bit of a mistake. All right, well, I think that's all we have for this one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we'll have more questions. We'll probably do more thorough breakdowns of everybody that's been on the team and what their roles will be moving forward and things of that sort. But for now, I think that's a good summary and of an overall successful season for Miami Heat basketball.
Agreed. Well, thank you for listening to the Heat Check podcast. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and Blog Talk Radio as part of the Hardwood Paroxysm Basketball Network. We'll catch you next time. For my real fans, I got caught up with a little Zan. Can you stop me, but it slowed me, though. Yeah, nigga famous, you don't know me, though. But their DJ still play me, though. Them, I don't even need the radio. Them new shit sound like a rodeo. Got the old folks dancing the do-si-do. So they fuck around, sign me to OVO. Ooh. I just might share my next one with Keith. Got the industry in disbelief. They be asking for beef. This what it sound like when God split an atom with me. I even had Steve giving out apples for free. They was talking, woo, this is what the band. City so damn great, I feel like Alexander. Way on halo like a hat, that's like the latest fashion. I got angels.